Hello, everyone, and welcome to Zero Patience Dilemma, the Scanlane Media Zero Time Dilemma podcast, and I guess kind of Zero Escape podcast. I expect this will be a one-off episode, but here we are. I'm Colin Detmar, your host. I am joined by Ben Uncle.
Hey there.
And our special guest this time, Emily Dalton.
I am busting into your podcast like a really angry Kool-Aid man. I have not played the game, but I'm pissed.
Okay. Your anger is useful anywhere.
Ah! So,
me and Ben both beat Zero Escape Zero Time Dilemma lately, which is the latest Zero Escape game and supposedly an ending to this trilogy, I guess they're calling it.
Yeah, they kind of leave the door open for potential in the future, but they pretty much resolve all of the cliffhangers that already existed.
Don't they? I want to say up front, like, this is going to be like the spoileriest spoiler cast you can ever spoil. We're talking about this game.
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah, we're going to be taking a hit. We're going to be taking a trip through the past, present, and future of the series in a way.
Yeah, the whole history. And I guess with that, I want to open with talking about 999.
Mm. Is that
nine
wise?
9 hours, 9 doors, 9 persons.
Because this game seems so much worse in comparison with 999.
Right? So let's start out on a positive note. Let's have some energy. 999's a really goddamn good game.
It is a great game and such a great horror game.
Okay, well, I guess I think going into this, me and Emily both feel that 999 is the best game of the series.
I would probably agree. I don't think I dislike the others as much as you two seem to, but 999 does this really great thing where the scope is small enough where you can basically wrap your head around everything really easily, and there's few enough characters that you get to know them really well, and they're all pretty good characters, so you really feel for the ones that you end up losing, and you really have this impetus to push forward and try and save them however you can. And basically going in knowing nothing about the series, none of the other games have the same experience when you finally realize that the mechanics you've been using to basically play through all the different endings directly factored into the story, with not only the top and bottom screens actually reflecting two different realities, but basically bad endings still being canon in a way because you're able to essentially see the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I saw a tweet from Patrick Klepek saying, like, I wish they would drop the puzzles in this series. I'm totally with him, except in the first game. Where, yeah, it just seems like a puzzle game, and then like a puzzle horror game, and then the story eventually, yeah, through the bad endings and everything else, figuring out what's happening. I think it's brilliant.
I feel like the Zero Escape series is a series that doesn't feel like it was necessarily made to be a series. Mm-hmm. Maybe they had in mind that they would create more games, but they certainly didn't seem to have a plan, because it feels like they built 999, and then they decided they were going to make a sequel, and they were like, wait, what is this series about? And looked back at 999 to figure that out. And that was where the problem started, to my mind. Because 999 I like a lot. I think those puzzles are really effective. And, yeah, the way that the ending recontextualizes them is really cool. I think it's stuff with the morphogenic field, the ability to sort of see the future or alternate histories and stuff, is all really neat. But the way that those elements are taken in the later games, and like, well, it's a sequel, let's go crazier with every single one of these, and like, certainly the puzzle rooms to me lose their charm pretty quickly after 999. And even some of them in 999 were kind of frustrating. And then like the what do you want to call it? I mean, the more ludicrous elements. I don't know, like, I don't want to say supernatural, because that's not quite right, but let's say the extraordinary elements, right? They go places that are just moronic, frankly, in the following two games. They're...
It's the Indigo Prophecy problem.
It's the Indigo Prophecy problem, yeah. It's, you have these elements, and when they're a little bit mixed with stuff that's normal and relatable and human, it's really interesting. And when the crazy starts to drown out the normal, then it becomes unrelatable nonsense.
Yeah, that's actually something I'm kind of curious about, because I feel like, basically, since Zero Time Dilemma is the one that we've all played more recently, that its particular brand of crazy is more fresh on our minds. But when thinking back on it, I'm not so sure that it plays out worse than the way that Virtue's Last Reward plays out.
No, it does not. I am not happy with Virtue's Last Reward. I think Virtue's Last Reward does... I mean, I think Virtue's Last Reward is better, and I think there are ways I could talk about in which it is better, and I guess we'll probably get to that, right? But the main thing is that I feel like Zero Time Dilemma feels like they're out of new ways to make it crazy, right? Like, I don't think that there are a lot of elements of Zero Time Dilemma that are a new element of crazy to the plot or to the situation. Like, Virtue's Last Reward introduces Radical Six, the mind-warping suicide disease, which, boy, do I have thoughts about that. It introduces, there being a person who's entirely in a suit of armor, so you don't know who he is, and he doesn't know who he is, as he's got amnesia, and there's science experiments, and there's robots, and there's, people who can jump through time, not, see the future, in 999, people who actually, die and then just jump to a different reality. It adds a lot more crazy, and Zero Time Dilemma doesn't introduce any new types of crazy. It just sort of keeps doubling down on everything.
They just back themselves into a corner, it feels like, on just crazier and crazier. I mean, it's almost too bad that I am on this podcast, because the reason I'm on this podcast is that Colin was laying out the rest of the plot for me this afternoon, and I was just getting increasingly angry and profane. Like, this is ridiculous. The 999, I don't know. Yeah, I wish the game hadn't been a series, frankly. I wish they'd done entirely different IP. I know it doesn't tend to work that way with a successful game, but it's such a bummer.
Like, I don't want to drown out your voice, Ben. You like these games. You like all three of these games, which is, to me, remarkable. But, you know, I don't want to just drown this out with me and Emily being like, this is all so stupid. Like, what do you feel about... I mean, I don't think it's in contention that the game, that the series gets more and more, crazy with its extraordinary elements as it goes on. How does that work for you?
Well, and, bear in mind, I've only heard about this game from someone who is enraged, so this is your chance. Sell me.
You were more enraged than me, but...
Well, I was born to rage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely starts stacking on top of each other, but I feel like with Zero Time Dilemma, they had a chance to... I feel like Zero Time Dilemma actually explains what happened in Virtue's Last Reward a lot better than Virtue's Last Reward explains it. I feel like the way that they sort of distance themselves from everything that happened there is somewhat beneficial to the whole thing. Like, I feel like they somewhat downscaled what was going on in Virtue's Last Reward with Zero Time Dilemma. Even though you are technically going towards even further in time, essentially, it is, for some reason, basically limiting it to three people per team and jumping back and forth between them made it feel more manageable than Virtue's Last Reward, because Virtue's Last Reward had a lot of characters that I frankly didn't care for, and Zero Time Dilemma has at least two characters that I really don't like, but I feel like Carlos is pretty good. I feel like Carlos Diana is also pretty good.
Diana's all right, yeah.
I cannot stand most of Q-Team, two-thirds of Q-Team. I'm just, no.
You mean three-fourths, right?
I guess so, yeah. There's... If we're taking
the character that they announce at 20 hours in, who has apparently been there the whole time, but no one has looked at, spoken about, or spoken to, and that's just supposed to be okay. Oh, that made me so angry. That was such garbage.
On the other hand, I mean, from what I understand, they knocked off that end of Virtue's Life's Reward, like, perhaps you, the player, will need to, like, apparently there's none of that in this third game, which I'm thrilled about. That was so stupid.
Yeah, I think that they kind of walked that back in Zero Time Dilemma. I think what they're essentially implying is that Diana is already aware of Delta at this... I think they're implying that Akane was already aware of Delta in Virtue's Last Reward instead of it being the player character.
Hmm.
And I think that works to some extent, but it's enough to make me sort of... It's enough to make me sort of forgive that whole player digression, essentially.
I don't forgive. But, I mean, yeah, it does... They do walk that element back, which was my least favorite part of VLR, for sure. But I feel like they've got enough stupid things of their own to make up for it. I feel like having the guy who's lived 124 years and who can read the minds of everyone instantly to predict everything they will ever do in every possible time period is pretty stupid.
And boring! That's boring. Come up with a, like... It just, I don't know, it seems like a wizard did it of the series. Like, oh, great, then. I can see how we should have figured that out, or that's, yeah, great, good, fine, fuck you.
But he can only read the minds after they have already experienced it all, which is happening at the same time as you are. Because what happens at the very end...
But he can read the minds of anyone who's done any jumps and anything, so he basically has all information forever. Like, in effect. Because, like, I mean, he set up everything in advance so that they would go through... Like, the events of... I mean, I don't know about the first game. No, the first game, because Free the Soul was involved in the events... Every event in every game so far has been as a result of one big plan of his as a person who can't even jump between dimensions. Because he just predicted all of it because he read minds. He predicted every single thing everywhere.
Hmm.
That's so boring. That's such a Superman solution.
Even 999? Because I thought that was the result of that CEO essentially being
so... Who was helped by Free the Soul, which is his organization.
But was he always the creator of that organization? Or...
Yes, Brother is the creator of that organization.
Okay. Yeah, I can see why.
Literally everything.
I guess the thing that really... The reason that I really enjoyed this one is... I feel like we see a lot of shades of the specific characters that I really liked from 999 and the ones that really stuck with me in Virtue's Last Reward. We see sides of them that we didn't really get to see in the other games.
Hmm.
Like, it's... I initially was kind of torn by Junpei essentially being... Now this really apathetic person who's like, I've seen shit, man. I'm no longer happy-go-lucky as I used to be, but the way that he kind of reconciles that over time with Akane just felt really... I basically feel really connected to that whole relationship, like the way that they kind of played that off. I'm really, really invested in the whole Junpei Akane thing. And Virtue's Last Reward's whole plot of him basically being this old man and not being able to see her until 70 years into the future or whatever, and kind of reacting to that. And also sort of, they basically have one of the endings here, well, two of them actually, that have to set up Virtue's Last Reward, because of course they do, since it's a middle of the road one. And basically, that whole moment where she basically has to make him forget everything in order for all of that to happen.
But that, like, that didn't make sense. It's like, oh, he didn't remember all of this in VLR, so he has to wipe her memory. But she doesn't have a great incentive to do so herself. She just does it. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, why did she do that? What was her motivation?
I feel like she did that because with the same reason why she disappeared for so long after the events of 999, she kind of feels this burden upon herself to basically handle things on her own. And even after everything that they went through together in Zero Time Dilemma, she still very much sees herself as this person who has to, since she has this power better than pretty much anyone else in the cast aside from Delta, she basically sees it as her burden, her responsibility to go at it alone and set all of these things alone so nothing can go be left to chance, essentially.
But what is the point of wiping his memory then? Because, like, you don't wipe his full memory. You wipe his memory of, like, a day. I mean, the drug doesn't make him an amnesiac, so he still remembers her. He's still going to chase after her. It doesn't solve anything. It just makes sure he doesn't remember the events of this particular day, which he clearly didn't have memories of in the previous game. So problem solved for your narrative loopholes. It doesn't make Junpei not want to find her.
Yeah, but that was the same position that he was in already.
Right, so it fixes their plot hole, but it doesn't fix, like, it doesn't help her. She wants him to be safe, and if he's chasing after her, he's not safe. That's her issue. She doesn't fix that issue.
Hmm.
It's something they did to make VLR make sense, not to make Akane's movements make sense.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. The one thing that kind of threw me off with the plans, because we're supposed to believe in Virtue's Last Reward that she was the one that basically created all of those plans, like the ambidextrous game and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That they have that in Zero Time Dilemma as something that she witnesses herself felt really weird to me. Like, they were... That yeah. seems to also be suggesting that she got the idea of the Ambidex game from that encounter.
It's a weird moment because it's one of those, like... I feel like, in general, the Zero Escape series is not one of those series that does, like, the world is smaller than you think in other games. But, like, it's totally like a Metal Gear Solid 3, oh, Revolver Ocelot was here all along moment, right? It's a, like, oh, Big Boss was just Solid Snake again. Like, oh... The Ambidex game is just a copy of this game she saw earlier in a previous game before she was in that other game. Like, everything is a copy of everything else. Everything has always existed. It's a really small moment of that, but it feels tonally inconsistent with what they do with those games, which is usually, oh, the world is so much crazier than you thought it was. Hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like... For me, this game is a lot of, like... I mean, okay, first of all, the UI and the graphics and the animations are all a big step back. The flowchart is way more confusing this time. It's way more easy to not understand why you can't advance. And... What? Like... The graphics, like... The models look good, the animations all look terrible. Anyone's mouth moving or trying to show emotion looks kind of terrifying sometimes. And it says to me that this is a game that they like, it seems like this is a game that they made when they had an opportunity, because clearly the previous two games didn't sell like gangbusters. They sold well enough, but not like crazy good. And they saw an opportunity to make this game and they made it before someone could be like, wait, never mind, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the situations where the series has garnered a really huge cult following in the Western area, and they've always sold like garbage in Japan. Mm-hmm. This one especially has... This one sold like 3,000 copies on 3DS and 5,000 on Vita over in Japan.
Yikes.
And you really get the impression that this is a passion project that they... eventually convinced Spike Chunsoft to basically fund to finish out everything. So there's definitely some corners cut in terms of budget, and I've heard rumblings that they wanted to do even crazier things, but that the budget and time constraints wouldn't allow for it, essentially.
I mean, like, I feel like you can also see those holes in the logic of the game, right? Like, one of the early, like, I'm going to call dilemmas the situations where you have a choice that, like, where someone could die, basically, right?
That works.
So one of the first dilemmas you encounter is, like, you're playing as D-Team, Diana, Sigma, and Phi. Phi is trapped in an incinerator. The incinerator door will open if it hears a gunshot, and as Luna, you are, like, you have a gun to Sigma's head, and there's a 50% chance of the, like, it's loaded with three blanks and three real bullets. You have to fire, and or you can either fire to try and get the door to open. Maybe it'll be a blank, maybe it won't. Or you can just wait and Phi will burn to death, right? And in, I feel like if this was in the previous games, like, those situations are always absurd and, like, the setup for them is not worth what you're getting out of them as the person who's planning that. Like, oh my god, that's so much work to set that up. Like, I just shoot them. Like, if you want them dead, this is really weird. But at least they are airtight in that there's no way out. And I feel like in a lot of these, they didn't pull that off. Like, in that one in particular, the gun isn't directly to Sigma's head like it is in some concept art. There's a lot of space between Sigma's head and the gun, and you could, say, put an object between the barrel of the gun and Sigma, or put your shoulder in the way if you didn't have an object you thought you could count on, and it would shoot you in the shoulder, and that would hurt, but no one would be dead. Like, and I feel like that's a problem that comes up multiple times. There's a puzzle where there's a dilemma where you have to roll dice, and if not everyone rolls a one, then these Gatling guns will fire and kill everyone. The Gatling guns are in the chests of three suits of armor. Knowing what I do about guns, if everyone just laid down on the ground, every shot would miss you.
But they do lay on the ground. They do try
they don't.
That.
And they don't. They hide behind a bar, and they hide in a fireplace. Those are the two things they try.
Yeah, but they completely dive to the ground, but those Gatling guns are still able to aim all the way down there and shoot them up.
That, I may be misremembering a bit. That may be the case. If so, that's one of two examples in this game of the writers not understanding how weapons work, because there's also a scene where Eric shoots Q Sean with a grenade launcher from 3 feet away, and like, okay, you would die too. That's how grenade launchers work. You're an idiot. Like, I feel like they didn't take the time to think these puzzles through enough. They rushed them. And because, like, it's because of the situation, I think, is my guess, but, like, the end result is the end result. These puzzles are dumb.
I guess I didn't really get the same sort of reaction towards, oh, there's a bunch of space in between the gun and this person, and shooting a grenade launcher this close would hurt everyone else. It just felt like a sort of cartoonish exaggeration that fits the other things that are happening in this. Like, there's a point where Akane is chasing Carlos with a freaking chainsaw down a hallway, and when they get into the room, they can't see each other despite it being pretty well lit.
Sake of the player. I mean, that's like a Hollywood thing. Like, it's well lit so that the people watching can see. I sort of, like, you talk about it being, like, cartoonish, and I think it's, like, I have trouble calling it cartoonish when it's basically the themes of it are, like, suicide, murder, the extinction of the human race, and endless misery. It doesn't feel cartoonish to me. It just feels like it uses ridiculous means to achieve its ends, which is kind of a weakness of it, in my opinion.
But there's also the puzzles where there are things like, oh, here's these 9 different dolls that represent each of the players, and Sigma keeps making those cat jokes. And one of the dilemmas is literally a button where if you press the button, the whole place explodes. Yeah.
That was one dilemma that was funny. That dilemma was funny. But, like, I mean,
do you want to lay it out real quick for the listening audience who are just listening for kicks and haven't played?
Sure. Sorry. There is one dilemma where, like, yeah, you finish a room and you're still locked in, and then a button appears and it says, do not press. And then the dilemma is basically, do you press it or not? If you don't press it, you have to wait 90 seconds while the two characters on either side of you are like, what's wrong with you? Press it. And the other one's like, don't, you're going to kill us all. And it gets increasingly manic. And then the answer is not to press it. And it's, if you do press it, it just sort of cuts to Fi's dumbfounded face and then an explosion. It's pretty funny. Like, it's not that this series doesn't have humor, but it's the fact that it has humor in it doesn't make everything intended to be humorous, right? Like,
for sure.
That was a moment of humor. Okay, well, let's talk about another dilemma, right? The antidote dilemma, where there are two antidote dilemmas. I'm talking about the second one, where Diana's team is suddenly is like, oh shit, we're poisoned. Like, fuck, we're dying, and they're lying on the ground writhing in pain. And then Gab, the dog, who they occasionally use to ferry messages or, in this case, three antidotes for them, shows up, and it says, this is an antidote, drink it, and it's three vials, and the choice is, do you drink them or not? If you're already poisoned, there is literally zero downside. Why would you not drink it? That's just a stupid dilemma.
But if it's not an antidote, your corpse is gonna, like, poop its pants. It'll be really embarrassing.
It's just dumb.
Yeah.
Gab is pretty great. Like, it's... Gab is the one place where the animation really kind of stuck out to me, because he's always just this really... He has this one mode where he's just constantly happy and smiling, and he just... He moves at the most glacial speed ever. So it's like, come on, Gab! Get the antidote! Get it over there! Get it over! And he's just slowly trotting into the vent after the piece of cheese that they threw in.
Yeah, like, that is one instance where, the just old dog who is just moving, like, really smiling, and then he has to move, and he just sort of, like, closes his mouth and just really stiffly, but, like, determinedly moves, looks pretty good. But also, animating someone moving stiffly is not hard. Anyway, I don't know. A lot of this is just things that have been in this series for a long time coming to a breaking point for me. Like, I really lost my patience in this game. This is the point where I finally was like, for God's sake, stop lecturing me on high school philosophy. And if you have to, at least get it right. Because a lot of the times you get it wrong, and I want to lose...
Give us an example, Colinator.
Like... One of the examples is Akane explaining to Junpei, like, randomization, and she's talking about rock, paper, scissors, and how if you had a rock, paper, scissors, the results are random, and that's bullshit. That is not true.
You and I have played. I know that's not true.
Rock, paper, scissors is played competitively. There are, like, world champions of rock, paper, scissors, because it's not random. It's a game of mind games. And so that example is garbage and useless.
There's a few examples of them doing that pretty well, though. Like, specifically, there's one puzzle room where the decision is basically the room eventually starts losing oxygen, essentially, or filling up with this noxious gas, and they have to figure out which locker the gas mask is in, and after solving half of the first one, and basically opens up in a way where one of the characters goes, oh shit, I know what's going on, it's the Monty Hall problem. But they don't actually say what that is. The only way you can find out is if you go to your quest log, and it basically explains what the Monty Hall problem is. Like, if it was done more like that, that would be...
I didn't know that, because I knew the Monty Hall problem already. Yeah, I mean, if they did stuff like that, I mean... When they get it right, it's fine. It's tolerable. I mean, like, in that instance, it's like there are 10 lockers. An oxygen mask is in one of the lockers. You guess, and then it says, like, are you sure? And it opens 8 of the lockers, which are empty, and there are 2 left, and says, do you want to repick? And in that case, in the Monty Hall problem, your odds are better if you repick to the other one. And so in the game, if you repick, you are guaranteed to get it. As opposed to the other instances of RNG in this game, which, oh boy, the RNG of this game is some horse shit.
Specifically the dice part. Well, unless they...
Well, the dice part is not RNG either. The dice part is, it takes 3 tries.
Yeah.
It takes 3 tries to get a success on the dice part, and you know that because after you get a success, Akane says, like, boy, that feels lucky, but what if it wasn't lucky? What if that took us 3 tries? And you're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Great, good.
Okay, you just wasted my time. Like, having me fail once and then succeed once would have been fine. Having me had to fail multiple times had no point other than to waste some of my time.
I do want to kind of go back and say something interesting that I picked out from you. You kind of mentioned, when you were talking about these different moments, you were saying, oh, it's not this poison vial one, it's this other one from an earlier time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cool things about this game, the way that the timeline stuff works, I actually like it a lot because they basically present it in a way where it's almost impossible to tell when and where it's happening. Well, you think you can for a time because you choose someone and it's like they check their watches and they're like, oh, it's this time. Because every 90 minutes they're basically knocked out and given this amnesia drug so they aren't aware of what happened in the previous one. And the same thing kind of happens to you as the audience. You know what's happened in other segments, but you don't know when those happened specifically. And then it throws out the revelation that those clocks were never the same for all of the different teams. They were specifically staggered out, so they were all waking up in the same area. They were just waking up at different times and hidden from one another in the same room, essentially.
So this is one of those instances where I'm glad to have Emily on here. Because very early, after my first play session of this game, which stopped after the gun dilemma, the revolver dilemma, I came up here, came upstairs, and I went outside to where she was gardening, and I ranted to her for a bit about the game. And one of the things I talked about in that very first rant was, there's a part where they're, like, trying to figure out, like, okay, is Zero lying to us? You know, like, what around here can we trust? Like, you know, like, oh, we can't trust that this works. What if this is a trap? Blah, blah, blah. And then someone says something, I mean, I'm not going to get this word to word, but pretty close, like, the only thing we can trust is these watches. And I said, like, why do you think you can trust the watches?
He did, it's true.
Why do you think that time has anything to do with anything and it's not just bullshit?
I don't know, I think I can get that because When they were all in the same area together, they basically got the explanation of the checking the watch time, and when they were all together, the nine of them, it was totally synced up, so...
Well, and but I can see it almost as a convention of... I feel like these games don't know what they are. Let me throw that out there. Like, 999 knew what it was. It was a horror game that was sort of a puzzle game. But this game, it's like, okay, so if this is a mystery, I read a lot of detective stories. If this was a mystery, then doing that would be totally fine. It would just be part of the convention. At least we can trust these watches. Like, okay, yes, I get it. But I don't feel like the games know what they are enough to be able, like, they take advantage of a bunch of different... It's like they rely on the goodwill from every genre they touch, and it's too much, right? Like, no, but the alien fax machine Nazi, like, no, it's totally cool. Like, no. You need to decide what you are, and then you get those free passes. You don't get every free pass.
Let's talk about the alien fax machine, please. Let's talk about the fact that the, like, the crux, like, the spine of the plot in this game is that in 1888, in the South Pole, Germany found a magic machine made by aliens that lets you fax things through time.
Did they, though? Because they pretty much suggest in one of the conversations that that was probably something that Zero made up, essentially. It's no doubt that they kind of did R&D, but for all we know, that could have been something that they essentially came up with at some point, but kept it secret.
What do you mean? Like, you're suggesting that this was not built by aliens, this was built by just the Germans, there's no alien part of this?
I'm suggesting that there might be some parts of it that were actually discovered somewhere, but I also think that essentially a lot of it was constructed by them, essentially.
I don't remember that ever being suggested, but even setting that aside, like, okay, so the fact that aliens are or aren't involved isn't that important, though. Why would the Germans invent something that uses a set of symbols that is nothing to do with human systems of language or even logic? That's probably something aliens would do, not Germany, who has their own language called German. Because, like, that language system you have to use to operate the machine with birds and moons and stuff. And also has, like, the cards are made of some material that they don't know what the nature of it is, but it's stronger than anything we have here, and that's a plot point because then they use it to fuck with their bracelets. I'm pretty sure it is actually an alien machine. But even if it's not, there's still the fact that the plot centers around the fact that you're faxing human beings through time.
I put my baby in it.
And that's garbage. That is such, like, if that was the whole point of the plot, if this was, say, Steins Gate, that would be fine. Like, I feel like you get one bizarro, ridiculous, nonsense element in game like this before the... Because if you get more than that, then it just becomes incomprehensible nonsense that you can't relate to. It's just like, okay, well, like, we're all psychic, and we can jump through time, and this guy can read minds, and also there's, like, robots... And also there's a computer that can simulate everything that has ever happened or will ever happen. And also there's a fax machine that goes through time. And also, and also, and also. And it's just like, okay, then this is worthless.
Yeah, you need to sit down and maybe have some water. Like, just chill out.
Again, I sort of feel like the previous games kind of built me up to more or less expect something with
these many elements.
That
is the biggest condemnation you could have said. Like... From the previous games, an alien fax machine of time is not that surprising. Yeah, like, yeah, okay, that seems right.
No,
like,
I mean, more like, since they're taking pretty much all of the other crazy elements from the other games, essentially, and building upon that, it kind of feels like they have more leeway to work around with this sort of stuff than they would if they just made a singular game with all of these different things happening.
I mean, I'm not saying that this is bad because they broke a rule, right? I'm saying this is bad because I played it and it's bad when they do this. Like, I'm saying it because when you have this many bizarro time and reality warping elements going on at once, it becomes impossible to connect to not everything, but a lot of things. You grow more and more detached as a viewer just because it's so absurd.
The one thing I never quite understood through all of this is what happened to Junpei? Was that just one of...
He worked as a detective, and while watching 6 billion people die makes you kind of a grumpy old man, working as a detective makes you lose all faith in humanity.
No, not that part. I sort of get that is silly. I'm talking about how did he get cut up? They never show the... They never saw how he got cut up in the first place.
Mira did that.
Mira cut up Junpei? When did they meet?
Mira, one of the reveals late on is the fact that Mira has never been getting drugged. She has been free this entire time, and just any time she wants to, she can crash anyone's party and stab them.
Okay, yeah, I totally forgot about that part. And in that regards, that's one of the reasons why I hate Mira's character. I think that she's the worst. Almost as bad. Actually, she's almost as bad as Eric. The thing about Mira that... And nothing gets resolved with her.
They just, like, we jumped to an alternate timeline where none of this happened. Okay, well, I guess we're leaving. Nobody pay attention to the fact that we're letting a serial killer walk free. Like, what?
Well, I told you
actually... They actually sort of explain that if you go back into the game and read the quest files after you complete it. They actually say, oh yeah, we threw her in jail. But same time... Oh, if you haven't read that, you don't even know the craziest part.
Hit us.
Okay, so basically, they kind of go... One of the things about this game is, after the game, they kind of tie up a lot of other things in epilogue... quest files that you only really see when you go back into one of the timelines.
And the last thing I wanted to do was go back in that game.
But yeah, basically what they set up is essentially Mira and Eric have somehow been engaged despite her being in prison, and Q ends up visiting and breaking a hole in the wall saying, okay, we think that we can actually get you to redeem yourself, but only if we go back and stop you from killing that woman.
Ooh.
Eric's mother. And they don't actually say that they actually go back in time and do that, but they're saying, okay, we're breaking you out now so you can redeem yourself.
And that's part of, like, okay, so... Until, like, in VLR, they set up that shifting gets harder the further back you're going, right?
Yes.
And then by the end of it, they've trained up Sigma so that he can jump back, like, you know, 50 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also in Zero Time Dilemma, they set up that if there are other shifters nearby, shifting gets easier, right? And so by the end of the game, they have six shifters, two of whom are unbelievably powerful, Sigma and Phi. And they're like, we're going to save the future. And it's like, well, okay. Why aren't we time traveling back further to fix other things? And like, I don't want you to, but you need to give me a reason that you're not.
Right.
You need to give me a reason that you're not jumping back to like to prevent these serial killings. And I guess that they do. Is that that's the answer?
Next
is that they jump
President
back to
Lincoln,
fix everything that happened within their lifespan?
Well, not quite, because Mira and Eric and Q are the three that cannot shift at all. They're the ones that are planning this on their own idea, essentially.
Oh, so they're just saying, why don't you redeem yourself? And they don't mean fixing that crime, because they're incapable of that.
Well, they can go back to the teleporter and use that, but
or
the thing about...
with the
okay,
proximity
so...
thing, they can just jam their heads against the bad guy's head and then mind hack people. Right?
I don't know if that's how that works. I don't think that's how that works.
I'm just expressing my anger.
Yeah. I guess I'm jumping all over the place here, but
yes.
I actually kind of liked part of the mind hack thing, because they eventually use that as an explanation for why characters at some point... Basically, the way that they solve the whole dilemma of... We said that the players involved in Virtue's Last Reward and what happens in Zero Time Dilemma is you basically are Delta in most of Zero Time Dilemma. Like, to set up some of the bad endings, or at least make decisions that the characters don't actually want to make, it's just you choosing things as you normally do. But the characters, every time they do it, they're kind of... Every time they act against what they would normally do, they're like... I don't know what happened. I just suddenly hit it. I can't explain why. And the idea of one of the secret Easter egg endings is with the crossbow room, essentially. And you're basically telling Q who you want to shoot with the crossbow. If you end up typing Q, you get a message saying, no, input Q's real name, and you eventually figure out that Q was actually the name that they called Delta for a while. So if you type in Delta instead, Q turns to the camera and shoots you with a crossbow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I thought that Easter egg was good, but I thought the fact that they had to rely on mind control to explain a lot of the choices in the game was bad.
I kind of feel like they were going for a similar thing as to what was happening in 999, where it turned out the choices that you were seeing on one screen was always Akane imagining those things.
Right, but I mean, it wasn't her imagining, it was her seeing into possible futures. Those are possible actions that someone might have taken. And so, like, if that's what you're doing, then, like, if Diana hits the button to kill the other two teams, right, when she has the opportunity, don't have her just be like, I don't know, that's literally something I'm incapable of. I'm not on me. Why don't we explore what, like, because, like, if you have infinite realities, right, then there is a reality in which she hit that button, and maybe the reason she did so is interesting, and not just, I was mind-controlled. Maybe she's a more complex character than just, I'm just the nicest person you've ever met. But I guess we can't have that, can we?
Well, listen.
Yeah, I guess it's also kind of a weird thing, because they kind of give leeway right before the choice that you could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always at least one character who's saying, you know, it might be better to do it for this reason instead. And they usually give a pretty good... reason for why that wouldn't actually be a dick move. Like, oh, they're actually going to, the other team's actually going to betray you, so you need to hit this instead in order to both keep yourself alive and to keep the other teams alive.
Like when in VLR, Clover as like, hey, I know there's really no reason for you to hit betray, but if you do it, I'll have sex with you. I'm not making this up. That's totally in VLR.
Yeah. I think she just says she'll give you whatever it is you want.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, yeah.
No,
she's not,
it's yeah, pretty it's, clear. It's, and then yeah, she's like, no, I didn't, I say it only because then she's like, I didn't mean that. Anyway, I gotta go.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's a little intense, but it's basically a good moment in VLR because she's like, fucking, are you dreaming? No.
That is one thing that Zero Time Dilemma actually gets better than the other two games. Well, aside from Mira's uncontrollable breast physics, but all the other parts of it.
That's my
VLR got really creepy at points.
Clover, right? Sorry, I have to cut. Like, Clover, like the sweet little girl from the first one whose, like, sudden turn into killer was really horrifying and affecting. Like, oh, now she just works for some kind of stupid agency that at least they dropped for this game, and she just dresses in almost nothing, and it's great. Good.
It's an agency where you show your tits. Think about
apparently.
It. The only members we saw.
It is, yeah, it is tit central over there. Great.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a huge bummer for me in VLR.
Like, that's a good point, Ben. It is really great that they walked that back. And, like, it feels weird clapping a developer on the back for not being a creep, but it's Japan and it's a visual novel, and that's, you know.
Way to go, you guys.
They rose above the genre.
Eventually.
But also, yeah, like, I mean, okay, so, like, the going back to the Diana shower button to kill the other two teams example, like, okay, have her hit the button and then say, like, why did you hit it? And she's like, I don't know, Sigma was yelling, I don't know, fuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
There. Done.
Yeah.
But having, like, the mind control just feels like a big cop-out to me.
Because
like,
it is.
Delta is a character that it feels like he was built to patch all the plot holes that could potentially arise from a third game.
Yep.
And the alien fax machine, I don't even know. I don't know. Like, I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff I could complain about, right? But, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, okay, like, here's the thing. Some of the puzzles were pretty good. There's a puzzle where, puzzle where you're doing the classic, like, stethoscope safe lock thing.
Mm-hmm.
That one's really fun. There's a puzzle where you are like you're in a room where all the walls and stuff like rotate, and it's like the, you know, it's the room with the big bullseye on it, Ben.
Yeah, that one was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun puzzle. Like, there's some good stuff in there. So like, the graphics have their ups and downs. They've made some improvements in the writing. Some of the puzzles were enjoyable, but I feel like it's a really inconsistent game, and the only consistent thing is that the answer to any question is stupid. Oh, and one more thing. At the very end, when you're confronting Delta in the proper timeline, right? And they're like, we're going to arrest you. And he's like, I didn't kill anyone. And you're like, well, we're going to send the cops to your creepy death house. And he's like, oh, weird thing, it's gone. And Sean is talking to you via radio waves from a satellite. I wrote this down. Because Sean Q is basically a computer who is remote controlling this body. And now apparently he's controlling the body via radio waves from a satellite. If that was the case, Sean would have been lagging so bad in that scene. And it cut. They should have done that. They should have had Sean's animations all delayed by like 3 seconds, and it would have been amazing.
But it's also 2029, so maybe they
radio waves are radio waves. Like, that's not going to change. If he hadn't said radio waves, he just said from a satellite, I would not be here bitching right now.
Well,
radio waves are radio waves, and you can't make them faster.
It feels kind of nitpicky to me.
It's nitpicky, but I'm not really inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt after they shot someone point blank with a grenade launcher, after they, like, after the antidote dilemma, which is should you commit suicide for no reason or not, after all of this stupid stuff in this game.
Well, okay,
after
okay.
The alien fax machine.
For each of you, what's your favorite Easter egg? Let's do something positive. What's your favorite Easter egg you saw?
There's actually a couple of those, but I think my favorite one was, let me think. I really liked how basically, actually, yeah, I'll have to think a bit more for the Easter egg one, but as for a running gag, I kind of like how Sean's eventual answer to any questions that are posed of him is hitting the coat on his head to take his freaking head off and rolled off. It's like, yeah, I'm a robot. And that, yeah. that somehow makes Eric calm down slightly. Though in my mind, he's so trigger happy that he probably should have just, oh God, your head's gone.
Yeah, in the latter half of that game, I mean, you're just jumping through different timelines where mostly it hasn't happened, but it's just like jumping to different timelines and taking your head off repeatedly. And it's like, okay. It's like, oh, I need to explain things. Here, I don't have a head. We cool? Okay, next timeline. I don't know. I think, like, I mean, my favorite Easter egg is probably the shooting Delta thing. That is one of the few moments where I was like, okay, like, if you're going to do this stupid Delta twist where there's a character who's been there all along who you haven't given us any evidence to, so that's just having a twist for the sake of a twist. Yeah, I mean, okay. I'll say this once. A twist with no clues is just bullshit.
Yeah, it's just a gotcha. It's no good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's some time that they mentioned the character before. I'm sure there. I missed
there
some
is technically part. One. When Q-Team is in the shower, the decontamination room, and they're talking things out, they mention that back at DCOM there was an old man. That is it.
Yeah. I just thought of the Easter egg that I really like. It's kind of ties into your shoot Delta bit. Basically, they have a lot of responses in some areas where you have a text prompt. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's kind of a fun idea where instead of just giving you an A, B, C, D multiple choice thing, you have to type out your answers. And the characters will often react in very different ways, or at least they'll give a lot of different responses. Like when you're trying to disarm Eric as Q, the real answer is not to say anything, but he gives so many different excuses for why he just wants to shoot you. Like, I think Colin mentioned this earlier when we were talking about it after he finished it, but basically if you answer, oh, who killed my girlfriend with Zero? And it's like, well, I guess in some way you're totally right, but you still did it.
Yeah, he's totally like, you know, I guess if you think about it, Zero kind of killed all of us. Fuck you! It's like, okay, that's good. Yeah, I don't know, like, I feel like they have attention to detail, but not attention to loose ends. Their attention to detail is pretty good, but like, yeah, I feel like they bring up a lot of logic holes through. Yeah, I don't know. I like if Delta wasn't the solution to this. If the solution, like even with the alien fax machine, which I have clearly made it clear how much I hate that, how garbage I think that is by my repeated mentioning of it. But even with that, I might have liked this game's plot overall better than VLR because I really hate Radical 6 as a thing. I think a disease that makes you commit suicide is really shitty.
I also thought the agency stuff was super dumb, and I'm glad they dropped it, but it also just went nowhere.
Mm-hmm. But if it weren't for the fact that there's a 124-year-old mind control man who knows everything you'll ever do in any timeline, then I would have liked this better, but I just...
Did they ever explain what was with his eyes?
No.
Like, he wears these shades because, A, they are colored really similarly to the gas mask that's been in all the other games, and B, behind them, there's just these bright violet eyes that look like they're from some omnipotent god.
Yeah, like a purple iris and then black sclera. Yeah, no, they never explained that, unless it's in one of the files that I didn't read. Because eventually I just stopped reading any of those files. I don't know. This game wore me out. And I enjoyed playing it just because it's so different. you know? Hmm. It's so different from what I've played. Like, I mean, obviously it's similar to VLR a lot more than it is 999. But it feels pretty similar to VLR, but it's just such it's a breath of fresh air, and I appreciate that. And not to do too much analysis of other critics in the medium, but like I feel like that's part of the reason it's been getting high reviews is just people being like, this is so different. I am so ready for something different. But a lot of what it does different is what it does dumb.
Well, I feel like some of the dumbest elements are actually the elements that they... In some regards, I feel like this is the most genre-specific version of those three games.
What genre?
Yeah.
Time travel, because I feel like it hits a lot of the time travel tropes that you didn't see being hit in the previous games. Specifically, the part where it turns out Diana and Sigma birthed characters that have been... pretty critical to the entire series. And it kind of folds back into Virtue's Last Reward, where Sigma did a lot of hitting on Phi in parts. And mm-hmm. with the context of this, it's like, oh yeah, I guess he was hitting on his old daughter when he was really old, which is... adds to the creepiness of Virtue's Last Reward in some way, but I feel like that is a very... That ends... That is a very time-travel-y trope, in addition to the characters of Akane and Junpei basically being intertwined, where no matter what timeline they're in, they always seem to find a way to basically group back together. I feel like seeing the whole series as this cohesive whole now... A lot of those ended up being fulfilled from other fiction that also deals with time travel.
Yeah, I mean, like, I am a person who has a lot of problems with the time travel. If it's a genre, I don't know if I feel like it's a genre. It's certainly a type, like, I don't know. Whatever it is, the time travel style of fiction I often have a lot of problems with. Like, even the supposed, like, best examples of it, I have a lot of problems with. So maybe it's just like these were never going to appeal to me. Like, the Diana Sigma faxing some twins through time, I was like, my eyes hurt. I was rolling my eyes so much. But
I feel like the way it ties Luna and Diana together is really sweet in a way, because you can really tell that it really legitimizes everything that you hear the other Sigma talk about, the recorded Sigma talk about in Virtue's Last Reward, about this person, Luna, being this person that he immensely cared for. And
but like in other timelines, like it's set up that like in other timelines, like in the proper VLR timeline, after the whole events, then Diana goes to live with Sigma on the moon base, and they live together, and eventually she dies. Like, you didn't need this, them having given birth to characters who are already here. You didn't need that element to it to make those two characters, like, once I figured that part out of, like, oh, Diana's the person who went to live with him on the moon base, which I figured out pretty early on, then immediately that relationship made sense to me, and I didn't need time babies to make it work. But you pointed out that the characterization in this one is good, and I do want to be like, okay, Eric is... I don't care about anything about Eric.
Eric really upset me, because I feel like the series has done plenty of dark themes before, and suicide, of course, is super dark, but the way that it set up the child abuse stuff was just so... It felt so needless to me. It just felt like they needed an excuse for him to go crazy, essentially, with the gun every once in a while, or start choking out Q. And yeah. The way that is set up just felt so callous and really uncomfortable. Like, there's lengthy audio files of hearing these two kids just getting the shit beaten out of each other or being choked to death. And it's like, I'd rather not.
Yeah. It didn't bother me that much, but it did, like, the fact that they were basically just doing it so that Eric could act like a dick randomly and be like, well, I guess he was abused as a child, whatever, was not great. But, like, I don't know. I don't want to talk too much about Mira either, because I also think Mira's kind of a mess as a character. But, like, Carlos was really good. Like, Carlos is one of my favorite, like, Sigma and Phi come back, and they were good in VLR. They're better here. Junpei, I am not convinced of the, like, oh, no, he started being a detective, so now he knows that humans suck and the world is miserable. I wasn't really convinced of that turn, but a lot of his moments with Akane are really good. Akane was really good. Carlos was fantastic. The character moments are really good in this one. And, like, especially, there's a series of events where Akane, Junpei, and Carlos are shifting from reality to reality together. And all that stuff is really good. Especially the part at the end where where Junpei and Akane go to a reality where he can't follow, and so he uses the alien fax machine to create himself before the game, and he just sits and waits, and then comes to go get them, and they're like, why didn't you just stop all this from happening? And he's like, listen, that would have been a good plan, but here we are.
Yeah, and then the rest of the scene is just them chewing him out like, you idiot, why did you just...
Yeah. The character stuff is really, really strong in this one.
Yeah. And I think they also really found a way to hammer home just how much of curse Akane's whole not only shifting but her ability to see other realities is. Because there's a part where it's like, okay, we need someone to survive this particular encounter. And we shifted right before the guns actually go off instead of right after. So...
Well, you'd be dead if you shifted after.
Yeah. But yeah, basically, it's, okay, we're going to have to use ourselves to make sure that she survives, essentially. And she basically has to not only see them basically riddled into a bloody mess right on top of her, but then she has to carry that knowledge with her when she shifts next. Mm-hmm. And she basically talks about how, you didn't even think about how this would emotionally affect me, how this is going to be stuck in my mind for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Though, on the other hand, I mean, like, I'm not saying she has to be desensitized by now, but, like, I mean, she also saw all of VLR happen as a little kid, right?
And 999.
And yeah, sorry, that's what I meant to say, is that, like, as like, what, like, a 12-year-old kid, she saw, like, all these people getting murdered with axes, and, like, I don't know, like, yeah, that was horrible, and I'm not trying to take away from that, but also, maybe at some point, it should just sort of be like, eh, people dying, okay.
Over it.
I actually feel like some of that legitimizes some of Junpei's darker moments in this more than the being a detective part, because he never really got that resolution of going up to Akane and asking her, you know, you put me through all of this stuff, this horrible, horrible experience in 999. You essentially made me go through something that no other human should ever go for, and you never really seemed to acknowledge that. You just disappeared on me. So I went to the ends of the earth to find you here, and you still don't seem ready to apologize or acknowledge what you did was incredibly wrong and incredibly fucked up.
Yeah, the closest she comes is being really indignant that you might think that this is another game arranged by her. Like, no, actually, that's a pretty fucking reasonable accusation, Akane. Yeah.
And Junpei pretty much suggests as much.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, do we, like, my notes, I could be here all day, but I feel kind of satisfied. Like, is there anything else we want to touch up on?
I guess I would just sort of acknowledge that, yeah, I do agree with pretty much most of what you're saying about the plot being convoluted and some of the puzzles being just the worst. You mentioned the dice thing, but everything right before that specific dice decision, that whole room is kind of a mess of oh, here's this really weird roulette thing, and you're supposed to track the numbers on to unlock this roulette wheel, but if you basically just type in spin, which is what you do with a roulette wheel, it somehow opens up. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that puzzle, which is like, the solution is the word spin, which is nowhere in the room. You're just like, oh, it's a roulette wheel, you have to type spin. Like, wait, what? No.
And there are numbers right next to it that make you think that you have to somewhat, oh, I have to go to the 22nd letter of the alphabet, and maybe I have to wrap around because it says 29, but there,
yeah.
Actually, there is a document somewhere in that room that explains that puzzle and why it would be that answer. It's just kind of out there and really hard to find. But I guess my ultimate point is, even with all these rough edges, they've somehow really retained my goodwill through all of these different games. I just felt really, really attached to everything that is happening, that somehow they managed to do the impossible and make a third one of these when it seemed like we were just going to end on this. It all happened on this, in this testing facility cliffhanger. And it's just really sweet to see certain characters get this emotional payoff I've been waiting for years now, essentially. And I don't know, something about it, just even in some of the moments where I was like, okay, I'm just going to look up a walkthrough to get through this part, I was just really appreciative of everything I was playing, and I just had a really great time.
I'm glad you had such a good experience.
Yeah. As a person who didn't play, what are your closing thoughts on the game, Emily?
Not gonna play, but I'm glad that they didn't bring back Clover with the titty outfit. I asked you, actually, Colin. Sorry, but like, so who's the lady in the booby outfit this time? You know? Is it Lotus? Is it, it's like, no, I think they've stepped away from that. Like, oh.
No, I said Mira.
Oh, right. Well, but okay. I want to give Mira credit for being, like, a crazy murderer. I told Colin, okay, my closing thought, I told Colin what I really want is DLC that's you playing from Mira's point of view, where, like, you have quick time events where you have to, like, okay, quick, act like everybody else, fall to the ground, and then you have to kill someone before the next time is up, or you'll have to get passed out with everyone else, and, yeah, you know, just wandering around humming to yourself, like the Jaws theme. I think it'd be great.
I guess, so...
Your closing thoughts?
I am not, like, I'm glad I played this game. It does give me closure on the series, which is just, like, after VLR, I was like, it feels like maybe making this into a series was a mistake, and I definitely feel that way, but I'm glad to be certain. I liked a lot of the character moments. It was gonna be a really hard task to close up this series no matter what, but I feel like they kind of, it was an elegant failure, right? They kind of, I feel like they really tripped all over themselves with the alien time machine. I guess my final thought is, I will be satisfied with this, like, this whole, my thoughts on this game and everything, and I will be at peace unless you bring this up on Game of the Year, because I swear to God.
It'll probably be one of my personal Game of the Years, but games of the year. But
I'm not. I like, anything is fair game. You can fight for it if you want. You have heard, like, me trying to be restrained and reasonable about this game, and that will not happen if you try and call it one of the best games of the year.
Fight for it if you want, but know that it'll be a real fight with punching.
All right, I think that's it for us, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. This has been, hopefully, the only episode. Well, maybe not hopefully. Maybe there'll be a fourth game. Maybe there'll be that Mira DLC.
Yes.
And if so, we'll make another podcast. But this has been Zero Patience Dilemma, our Scanline Media podcast on the Scanline Presents feed, which you can find on iTunes, and give us a rating or review if you want. You could also go to scanlinemedia.com if you want to check out other content from us, from me, Ben, and also our friend Johnny. And if you want to back us, you can go to patreon.com/scanlinemedia and contribute. And any of that money goes to getting us more equipment or software so we can keep covering things. I'm probably going to need a new microphone.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that we actually use some of those Patreon funds to make this possible. Like,
that's true.
We got people the copies that they needed to basically play this and record this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That those funds are put to use in measurable ways. I want to thank our guest, Emily, for coming on and bringing the anger. I had more of it than I expected, but I realized. So I was actually able to be pretty angry, but the backup anger was great.
Anytime. I'm your angry consultant.
And we'll see you guys on another podcast later.
Bye.
Bye.